All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Common Sense. It is Thursday, January 19th. At least if you're listening to the live version on the radio and on Facebook. And if you're listening as a podcast, you'll have to look at your watch. It's another beautiful day on Lake Wissota. It is a snowy morning on Lake Wissota. I'm not sure when the snow began. They told us it would be sometime after midnight, but by the time I got up at 4 o'clock, there was already 3 inches on the ground up here on Lake Wissota, definitely past 3 inches by now. And still going to be coming down for a while. Aaron, you reported a couple of inches down there in Madison, I guess. Mr. Zommers, our producer.
Yeah, a couple of inches. And my main concern is just that it's the real thick, wet, sticky stuff. So it was really annoying to get it off my windshield. And I had to drive pretty slow because getting here a little later than intended is better than not getting here.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I haven't been outside yet. Ours looks to be more of the fluffy type, but I guess you never really know till you get out there. So please, everybody, just take it easy out on the roads today. That was Aaron Zommers. You heard, you'll hear his golden tones asking you, what do you want? If you give us a call at 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. And by sheer coincidence, I have not one, not two, but at least three topics that I think have the potential to generate callers from folks who've never called a radio station before, who want to take a side. Like I said, different things came up, and I'm like, well, do I space these out over time? I'm like, no, these are all very topical things. So I think in our next segment, we'll start talking about things that we fight about here in Wisconsin. Now, otherwise, coming up this morning, beyond the current crises facing women and healthcare providers in the wake of the Dobbs decision, the attack on healthcare rights by right-wing justices and politicians is going to take an economic toll on Wisconsin. Joe Zepecki will join us. He'll talk in part about how Xavier Becerra, President Biden's Secretary of Health and Human Services, has been in Minnesota and Wisconsin on this anniversary week, 50 years after the Roe v. Wade decision, and talking about the impacts of a right-wing Supreme Court striking down the abortion protections in Roe v. Wade. That's going to happen at the bottom of this hour. Then in our next hour at 7:30, we have our weekly hometown health segment with Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and she is bringing along two guests to talk about Doctors in Recital. It's an annual event that shows off the talents of Green Bay area physicians and others while raising funds that will benefit music education programs and other charities. Before we get really going on the show here, I was trying to do some basic maintenance here, which is, you know, technical term for clean my desk. And I realized that I got this notice that, you know, maybe one of your web domains is about to expire. And Aaron, I'm sure you've got a domain or two out there, even if it's just like aaronzommers.com or something like that.
No. Maybe I should. I don't know.
Well, now I'm going to wonder, or maybe I'll go, you know, snatch it up. I don't know. So, you know, I've got a couple of things related to that. When you run for political office, the one thing you'd better do is snatch up those things like patkreitlow.com, kreitlow.com, Kreitlow for Senate, Kreitlow for Congress. You know, you got to go get those things. So I am quite familiar with Network Solutions and GoDaddy and those other sites where you can register a domain name. Even if you don't do anything with it, at least you own the name. Well, I get one of these notes that says, you know, one of these domains is about to expire. And, you know, it says right here from this company by a different name altogether that says, if you, you know, you have to act by such and such a date. I thought that doesn't seem right. So I went to the one service for the one domain. And I got rejected, saying your password is expired because you haven't logged on for so long. Well, why should I have to? I don't need that. Anyway, we've sent you know, a link to this email address. Well, the email address that I had them send it to is an old Hotmail address. I mean, I never look at that thing. That is definitely, if I know I'm going to end up on somebody's junk mail list, I give them the Hotmail address because I don't have an AOL one or CompuServe the way I used to back in the day. So, okay, great. Now I've got to get into Hotmail. Hotmail gives me the same runaround, says, nope, you need to change your password. And I tend to use a certain password management app, and things were just not working to get through the various hoops to get through and eventually log in to Hotmail, see all the junk mail in there, click on the one thing so that I can change my password to protect my domain name. I finally get back to that program. I finally log in with a brand new password, only to find out that the piece of mail I got was from some company with like a similar name, but the domain that I had registered is still good for like another 5 years. So the whole entire thing was unnecessary. And I promise you, whenever I do have to go back into it, or whenever I do have to go back into Hotmail, I'm going to have to go through that whole thing all over again. And
oh, definitely.
Everyone, yeah, you know, everybody's been through that. And I also have here at Courier Newsroom, and I know this is good corporate practice, but I always stay logged in. Every couple of weeks or so, it logs you out and makes you put in your password again. I understand why they do it, but it's always at the worst times, like when the waiter comes up and asks how your food is when you're in mid-chew. Let's take a break. We'll go through some of the headlines on the day and things that we fight about coming up right after this on Up North News Radio. It's an old commercial jingle, taking one of those folk songs and turning it into a jingle for Coca-Cola. I'd like to buy the world of Coke, which you'll be able to do now, eventually, soon here, if you go to Culver's. Because in what apparently is counts as an earthquake in Wisconsin news, when something happens at Culver's, much like a Quick Trip, for example, well, Culver's is making the switch. They're dropping their Pepsi products and they're picking up Coke products for their nearly 900 restaurants that are now in 26 states. The Culver's announcement through a spokesman says, "We want to remind our guests that in addition to Coca-Cola products, we will still have some favorites, including our signature root beer, diet root beer, Dr. Pepper, sweetened and unsweetened tea, all to enjoy with, as of course they have to say, their fresh, never frozen butter burger." If I'm going to Culver's, I'm going for the burger or I'm going for the ice cream. Coke, Pepsi doesn't really matter to me, but I do know people feel very strongly about this, Aaron.
Yeah, I know some people do, but I also know that I'm still just going to get either the unsweetened iced tea or the root beer.
See, now I like the root beer. I like it a lot. I'm okay with the diet root beer. I know I should be drinking the diet root beer, but the regular root beer is just so good. So, of course, that'll still be there. And where I've seen the comments where people are howling is not because they're going to miss Pepsi. I frankly don't know a lot of people who are devoted Pepsi drinkers. It's that it means Mountain Dew is going away instead. And, you know, that you'll have to come up with a favorite Coke product. I'm one of those who made the transition to Coke Zero and then stayed with it when they switched up the recipe a bit. And I'm perfectly happy with that. But the honest truth is I grew up a Pepsi drinker. My mom was a Pepsi drinker. I drank, truckloads of Diet Pepsi before I switched in college to Mountain Dew, of course, and then switched back to Diet Pepsi. And the story of how I became a Coke drinker is relatively goofy, but it is based in some kind of seriousness. And it happened while I was a state legislator. We got a briefing on corporate tax loopholes. And this was shortly before we passed legislation designed to close what was called the Las Vegas loophole, where, you know, a Wisconsin company would just get a P.O. box in Las Vegas, in Nevada, where there isn't a corporate income tax, claim to be a Nevada corporation. And even though they're using Wisconsin roads and a Wisconsin workforce and all the other resources that make them a successful Wisconsin business, they weren't paying Wisconsin taxes. Anyway, as part of this presentation, they showed a couple of columns of competitors where one company did pay corporate income taxes in Wisconsin, and one paid zero. And one of them was in the cola column, where it showed, you know, that Coca-Cola was paying its share of taxes and Pepsi was paying zero. And I planted my flag right there. I came home. I think it's one of only two times I know that we have just turned on a dime and stopped getting a product. We were done. We've been Coke drinkers ever since. For all I know, those stats they're well over a decade old. But it made an impression at the time. Like, no, I'm going to go with the people who are actually, you know, being honest with the taxpayers.
Yeah, I think that's a great reason personally. And I'd be interested to see where those numbers are now, if either of them pay taxes, or if they're probably both owed tax money by the taxpayers of Wisconsin.
I'm sure they are. I'm sure both are zero now, because obviously this was before Republicans took over the legislature and basically wiped out corporate taxes. We all have to pay the difference now because of something called the Manufacturing and Agriculture Credit, which is a nice apple pie sounding name. But all it really means is corporate taxes went down to near zero.
Yeah, it's really just the Ron Johnson hot tub fund.
Yes. The only other time I know I've switched products on a dime is, and I can say this in all seriousness, I mean this, I have not had a single Hostess product since that company broke their union several years back. And I used to love, you know, Hostess cupcakes, Ding Dongs, Twinkies, you know, whatever. I have not bought a single Hostess product since then. And again, for all I know, Little Debbie is worse. Maybe Dolly Madison is terrible, but I just know that at the time, Hostess was awful. And I thought, well, they don't need my money. And I've just stuck with it ever since. So anyway, that gets us to why some people drink Pepsi, some people drink Coke, and why at Culver's, you're going to get a switch. So those of you who care to comment on what it is you're drinking, Pepsi or Coke, or, you know, what you get at Culver's, you just feel free to let me know. You just give the studio a ring here at 715-388-7155 or 844-967-2789. Tomorrow on the program, State Assembly Representative Lisa Subek on how Democrats are turning the tables on Republicans when it comes to using the referendum process. We will also preview Governor Evers' State of the State address coming up next week. Also, Courier Newsroom national correspondent Keel Vakil helps us understand the dangerous game Republicans in Congress are playing with the debt ceiling and a very fragile economic recovery. This is normally the point where I tell you what's new over at Up North News on our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Well, first I'm going to talk about the website. But then I've got to talk about something on our Instagram feed here. On the website from freelance writer Susan Lampert-Smith, the headline is $209 a pound, the story behind the special Wisconsin cheese that's back on sale. And that's right, cheese at $209 a pound. It's all about Hook's cheese, and they are releasing a batch of their 20-year cheddar to a lucky group of lottery-winning cheese lovers. I think once upon a time I would have mocked this, the whole notion of 20-year cheddar. You know, is it really the same as like how wine gets better than age? I've now had enough to tell you, yeah, it is. There are certain things that do get better with age. I'm sure I've never had 20-year-old Hook's cheddar, but I've had other brands of, or other ages of Hook's, other types of Hook's. It's really good. But for me, what really did it was Marietta Gouda, right up here on Highway 29 in Thorpe. And they have different ranges of ages for their Gouda cheeses. And you find the one that works for you. And I think ours, now I can't recall. I'd know it if I saw the label. It's either aged 9 to 12 months or 12 to 18 or something like that. But boy, you find a favorite and you understand that there's a difference. But $209 a pound? I mean, I get it. You're not really buying a pound of it. But anyway, take a look. UpNorthNewsWI.com is where you'll find us there. Now, on Instagram, if you search for Up North News by searching for Up North News WI, we not only put up plenty of our own material, but we also pass along material from others on Instagram. It's called regramming, so that, you know, other people who are making Wisconsin-based videos can get a little bit more exposure. And, you know, we definitely have some favorites. Everybody knows Charlie Behrens. Almost everybody knows Kristen Bry, who does As Goes Wisconsin on many of these stations coming up at 11 a.m. And if you don't know Kristen Bry, you should, and you really ought to be watching her videos. She has also done videos alongside a young woman named Alex Worley. I hope it's Worley. If it's Worley, I apologize. She does plenty of very Wisconsin-themed videos, too. But I don't know that I've ever seen more comments on one of her videos than the one that she's got up currently. And again, you can find it over at the Up North News Instagram site. It's a video on chili and what she calls Wisconsin chili. And all she means when she talks about Wisconsin chili is, I think her line is, of course, it's Wisconsin. We have to add carbs to everything. And so it's Wisconsin chili by adding elbow macaroni. Well, at that point, the world explodes in the great debate of whether chili is chili if it has noodles in it. Looks like he feels very strongly about this.
I never even knew that noodles, like elbow macaroni, was not supposed to be part of chili. So, I mean, so-called supposed to, a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm. I, you know, being born and raised in Minnesota, but with a parent who lived in Wisconsin, I had never seen noodles in chili until I met my soon-to-be wife and then her family over out by Manitowoc. And their chili always has elbow macaroni in it. So I've been used to chili with noodles for so long that I forgot that it was a controversy. But it really strikes a chord with people about, you know, that if you, it's the moment you add the noodles, it's no longer chili, it's now goulash.
Or chili mac.
Or chili mac, or whatever you want to call it. Now, the fact of the matter is, I love goulash. I learned that from my Polish grandma. Albina Pingle was her name. I'm not making that up. And, you know, her recipe was great. And it's very basic: ground beef and elbow macaroni and, you know, canned tomatoes that you chop up and, you know, tomato paste to thicken it up a bit. Now, if you were to, so there's no way that you'd confuse that for chili. So what's the difference between, you know, goulash or chili? And the answer seems to be liquid content. You know, if you're going to add enough tomato sauce or water or other liquids, at some point that then becomes chili. Or does it? Because there's noodles in it. Again, apparently some kind of a line has been crossed that, you know, some people really wanted to fight over. So we would love to know if you feel strongly about that. And then, coincidentally, over at the Up North News Facebook page, there was a reposting, get this, of another Wisconsin company, Quick Trip, put up something along the lines of, and they were just having fun, but saying, yeah, we're not sure of the difference between Fleet Farm and Farm and Fleet either. Now, again, they're joking, they're having a little fun with Wisconsin, but again, the comments exploded with people. The overwhelming majority of them passing along the myth that I too once used to believe, that Farm and Fleet and Fleet Farm were the result of two brothers who feuded and went their separate ways, and, you know, one took the opposite name of the other. Not true. And last summer, both in Milwaukee Magazine and public radio station WUWM did these really nice explainer stories. And the one at Milwaukee Magazine, which you'd find at milwaukeemag.com, is a really good article explaining in great detail the difference between the Blaines, who, which it was two brothers who started Farm and Fleet, and the brothers in the Mills family who started Fleet Farm. They were more toward Minnesota. The Blaine brothers were more in central and southern Wisconsin. And in both cases, they started in about 1955 because of minimum markup laws that were designed to only provide wholesale prices to people who had, well, basically to farmers or anybody who had an actual fleet. You see, Farm and Fleet, Fleet Farm. So both companies got their start by selling to farmers and others who had a fleet, but eventually the minimum markup laws were loosened, and so more people could go there. They added more products, candy, clothing, you name it. Both store chains did it, and so they both exist and thrive to this day, but they were not the result of two brothers feuding. Do you have a favorite among the two stores? You can always call anytime or send us an email and let us know about that as well. Coming up next, Joe Zepecki talks about the economic impact of the Dobbs abortion decision. Next, you're up north.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
To let me know, should I stay or should I go?
Joe Zepecki does a little political analysis for us most Thursday mornings at this time. We usually pre-record the conversation on Wednesday afternoons. And when we sat down yesterday, the first topic was about abortion. Not just the radical court decision striking down Roe v. Wade, not the current crises facing women and their healthcare providers, but we go to the next level, the economic cost placed on all of Wisconsin because of these right-wing justices and politicians. Xavier Becerra, President Biden's Secretary of Health and Human Services, is spending this week in the upper Midwest. He's been in Minnesota. He'll be in Wisconsin today and or tomorrow. And it reminds us of some of the key differences between the Badger State and the Gopher State. Not just abortion care access, but the doctors and others who will move there instead of coming here or staying here. And on a larger scale, the companies who are moving or growing, they'll see Minnesota and Michigan protecting women's rights and their female employees. And then they'll look at Wisconsin politicians criminalizing women and their doctors. Joe Zepecki makes note of all that in talking about Secretary Becerra's visit on this anniversary week of the Roe v. Wade decision in 1973.
Here we are 50 years later, and who would have thought that the clock would have been turned back at least 50 years by the Supreme Court? And so Secretary Becerra's visit to both Minnesota and Wisconsin today and tomorrow is, as I understand it, intended to sort of highlight the complication that goes into what the Supreme Court did, which is state by state, community by community, the rules are different, the laws are different, and that is really, really scary. If you and your family are expecting and you have a complication and you don't know what the rules are, if you're in St. Croix versus if you're in St. Paul. And there's a real impact and cost to that. And so I could not be happier to hear that Secretary Becerra, on behalf of the Biden administration, is coming to sort of lay bare, this is the challenge, folks. This is what this means for people, and we have to do something about it. Now, listen, in the comparison, Wisconsin's not going to emerge looking real good, right? Because in Minnesota, it is still easier to access reproductive health care than it is here in Wisconsin. And so Wisconsin's not going to look great. That's disappointing to me as a Wisconsinite, somebody who loves this state. I ain't going anywhere. But to your question, I think it also speaks to a part of this debate that we haven't really had yet. Women should have agency and the rights to make their own decisions when it comes to their health care. Period. Full stop. There doesn't need to be any more than that. And we live in a time now where this is, again, a political question for reasons passing understanding. So to our friends on the Republican side of the aisle, who refuse to bend, to even try to find an agreement or compromise on this issue because of how draconian Wisconsin's 1849 law is, there is room to compromise. So far, we haven't seen them willing to do it. And what I would submit is that there is a real economic impact to the state of Wisconsin for as long as the law here stays what it is. And what I mean by that is, if you are a major employer, if you are looking to establish a foothold in the Midwest, and you're looking state to state, community to community, community to community, where do I want to invest? Where do I want to put down our headquarters so that in a community where employees want to live and work and stay? And when they're looking at Michigan and Illinois and Minnesota, three states surrounding us where women do have more rights today, right now, what Fortune 500 CEO is going to say, no, we're going to pick that red dot in the middle? That'll be how we attract the young workforce that we want. Like, come on, folks. So I it's a important conversation to have. Wisconsin's not going to look good, but I'm asking folks to really just understand there are parts of this that we haven't really considered, and we ought to, because whether it's reproductive health care for women, whether it is any access to either even medicinal marijuana, much less recreational marijuana, we are becoming an island surrounded by states that have public policies and laws in effect that make them more attractive and make Wisconsin look less attractive as a place to come and do business. That's a bad combination when you consider our demographic challenges as a state. We're aging, we're getting older, we're getting grayer. No offense to our host, Pat Kreitlow. I'm falling victim to this too. But we need to attract new companies, young professionals, and the public policy choices that are being made and the refusal by Republicans to come find agreement with Democrats on this is really going to have an effect. It's already having one, but we're talking about maybe years or generations to fix the opportunities we're missing out on right now.
And the question will have to be asked, who's been running the legislature for the past 12 years when all of this has happened, when Wisconsin has become more of an island than ever before? And I would submit that the Republicans aren't the shovel is still in their hand. They're still digging, and they're digging now in the hopes of finding a flat tax somewhere in this hole. And that ain't happening.
And it's not going to work. It hasn't worked in Iowa, right? Iowa has some of the same demographic challenges we have. They have a very, very flat tax. It might not be the flat same, but it's very flat. It's flatter than ours, and it's not working, right? And so what I wish people would understand is the cost of these policy choices, right? It all goes into the mix. And then what you end up having to do is, if you want to compete as a state economically, is you have to basically do legalized bribery and give away the store, like the Walker administration tried to do with Foxconn, which was a bad deal then. It is a bad deal now. It was a risky bet from day one. And that's the only option you have, is to try to just, with dollars and cents, lure businesses here. When if you have a thriving, growing communities, great schools, a talented workforce, which boy, do we ever have, that should be enough. But when you've got all these, wait a minute, Wisconsin's the one in the Midwest where three doctors have to sign off before a woman can get life-saving health care if she's pregnant. Gosh, we don't want to submit our employees to that. That stuff has a cost. And we, Republicans aren't thinking about this the right way. They paid the price for it with Foxconn. Maybe at some point in the future, they'll finally get the memo that there's more to this than just, hey, Company X, here's your blank check.
There should be more to economic development than that, most definitely. Joseph Eck is joining us now. Let's pivot briefly to the state Supreme Court race. Again, four candidates involved. Two are conservative, two progressive. The top two in the February primary advanced to April. That could be both the progressives, it could be both the conservatives, it could be one of each. It all depends on who shows up to vote on February 21st. Part of this, whether people like it or not, these are election campaigns. We had Chris Taylor on yesterday morning making the case that, look, we've got those. It lets the people have the decision. So if we're going to elect our justices, there's going to be fundraising involved. And you've been taking a look at the fundraising activity by the four candidates. And what's your take on how hard they've been working, knowing that this is going to be a tough election campaign?
Well, the one that jumps off the page is Judge Janet Protasevich, who has set a record for the amount of money she raised in the last 6 months of last year. and enters 2023 with $750,000 on hand. That is a big number. You know, these are low turnout elections. They're not that expensive compared to, you know, the U.S. Senate and governor's race that we saw last year. But absolutely, you know, eye-popping number from Protasevich. Clear that she's been doing the work, clear that her team, you know, is taking this serious. And we need a candidate who's going to take it serious because of how much is at stake. Then if you look a lot further down, you basically have the two conservative candidates, former Supreme Court Justice Dan Kelly of the Walker days, and then the MAGA candidate, Judge Doro from Waukesha, both sort of about neck and neck. I would say that that was a little surprising to me that they were as close as they were. I thought the Walker machine would really be there for Kelly, but the Trump, I guess, it fooled me once, you know, shame on me, fooled me twice. You can't get fooled again, as George W. Bush would say. And I guess the Trump wing of the party really continues to drive things because they appear to have lifted Doro's numbers up pretty good. So I think it's a real dogfight for kind of that pole position to be the conservative choice in the race.
Sure.
And then you look several hundred thousand dollars below where they stand and you see Judge Everett Mitchell. There's just no other way to put it. Really disappointing fundraising from Judge Mitchell. You know, charismatic guy, smart guy, you know, been out there, you know, on the shows, taking the questions. But you have to put in the work. You have to, you know, you have to raise the funds. I'm not sure what's going on there. But when I look at the sort of 10-to-1 disparity between what Protasevich has and what Mitchell has, it becomes pretty clear to me that pretty quickly, you know, there's going to be a coalescing around Protasevich, and she will be viewed as the progressive candidate. Because the other part of fundraising and the reason this matters is money follows money, right? How much money you have heading into the year is an expression of how viable you are, and how viable you are means the people who have been sitting back and have an ability to give money are going to say, oh, well, that looks like the winner right there. So that's where we're going to go. So I think Judge Mitchell is in a tough spot right now.
We got about a minute left, and I definitely want to get your thoughts on the fake congressman from New York, George Santos, and not his real name, and what he has done. Because, again, you have some experience working with, for example, small business owners, and what they must think of this.
I do. So Congressman Santos, assuming that's what we're calling him today, you know, Kevin McCarthy, the Republican speaker, who made a bad deal to get the speakership, appointed George Santos to committees, despite the fact that there are all these questions, despite the fact that there are ethics investigations, despite the fact that there appear to be criminal violations committed by this young man. And the speaker did not have to appoint him to committees. He could have said, you know what, we're going to let you focus on getting your affairs in order, and in 6 months we'll revisit. There's nothing that says you have to be on a committee. And the fact that the Republicans and Kevin McCarthy have put George Santos on the Small Business Committee, which oversees the U.S. Small Business Administration, of which I am a proud alumni. I worked there during the Obama administration. And you're right, I did get to talk to small business owners all over the country. What a slap in the face. This guy, who it is reported to have ripped off a charity, stolen $3,000 that was supposed to go to a sick puppy, he stole it. He's going to do oversight for small business? Small business owners don't get to break the rules. They don't get to lie. It's a travesty. It's insulting. I'm insulted, and small business owners across the country and across the state should be insulted by what Kevin McCarthy did this week.
Joe Zepecki, thank you very much. Always appreciate his insight on things. And let's shift gears now to some happier news and ways that if you run a small business, you don't have to put up with the likes of George Santos. You also don't have to put up with big expensive bills for radio advertising or creating a campaign, because Civic Media is giving away $1 million in ad time. You can fill out an application starting next week, Thursday, to be part of that $1 million giveaway and have the radio sales team help you create an advertising campaign for free. You can get details on any of the Civic Media Facebook, Twitter, Instagram pages. Full rules apply. Details at civicmedia.us/million. Forgot to mention a little bit earlier, only one sports note, but it was Marquette. Marquette, the 20th ranked team in the country, defeating number 22 ranked Providence 83-75 on Wednesday night. Coming up tomorrow, or let me do next hour once again to remind you that Dr. Kristen Lyerly is bringing along a couple of guests to talk about Doctors in Recital, an annual event that shows off the talents of Green Bay area physicians while benefiting music education programs. More music after this. Happy birthday greetings go out to Dolly Parton, who turns 77 years old today as we look at this day in history on January 19th. Dolly Parton, the newest member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which I think she thought was going to become a national punchline at some point, tried to actually withdraw from the ballot because she never asked to be on it, but she stayed on there. People voted, and there she is, and she put on a really good performance. She really had a good attitude about it all. Very humble, very kind, as only Dolly can be. So happy birthday to her, turning 77 today. This is also the anniversary of the date of Robert Palmer, who gave us Addicted to Love and plenty of other big rock hits, who was born on this day in 1949. Sadly, Robert Palmer passed away back in 2003. Another birthday. Oh, more birthdays today. Pete Buttigieg, the Secretary of Transportation, is a ripe old 41 years old today. 41. I'm now at this age where I can, you know, call somebody like him a young punk at 41. But he is a former presidential candidate. I would dare say future presidential candidate as well. Let's see. This was also the anniversary of the birth of Malcolm James McCormick, better known as Mac Miller. The rapper died, however, in 2018 at the age of 26. It is also the anniversary of the birth date of Janis Joplin, who gives us Crybaby, as we're going to hear here. There is no mistaking that voice, but Janis Joplin sadly passed away back in 1970. At just 27 years old. Phil Everly of the Everly Brothers was born on this day in 1939. He had passed away in 2014. It's the anniversary of the birthday of short story writer, poet, and critic Edgar Allan Poe. And it's the birthday of the American Civil Liberties Union. The ACLU was founded on this day in 1920. These lists are put together in part by Aaron Zommers over here, which leads me to ask, when you put Edgar Allan Poe's name on here, if you are an Edgar Allan Poe fan, if you read a lot of his stuff in your formative years?
Yeah, I would say so. I definitely read some of his stuff in school, and I was like, hey, that's actually kind of cool, and went on, read a little bit more.
For me, it would be the Telltale Heart. I don't know much of his works at all. I just remember reading that one, I'm pretty sure in high school, and going, this guy's really good. Also really creepy. Not that the guy is creepy, but the stories are creepy. And I've never been, as we've discussed previously, I'm not a horror movie kind of person. It's not something where I would have said, oh, now I must read everything else Edgar Allan Poe has ever written. But I can certainly appreciate what he did. But, you know, unlike you, you have more of an appetite for, you know, horror and gore and everything else out there.
Yeah, I didn't used me. To.
I'm a baby.
I know when I was younger, probably through potentially even in high school, I just avoided all horror stuff. And then some of my friends were watching it and I saw some and I was like, you know what? That's actually pretty cool. And it wasn't like the gory slashers or anything. It was like newer stuff like Get Out by Jordan Peele.
Mm-hmm. See, now that's another one. You know, people have raved about the writing and everything else, but it's just not something I would volunteer for. I'd probably like it if I saw it, maybe, but I don't know if I'd run for it.
Yeah, I don't think I saw it in theaters. No, one of my friends recommended it, and we watched it. I enjoyed it, and then we started watching a couple other horror movies that are close, more on the thriller spectrum than horror stuff, like Alien.
No, here's where I am, and folks will get this right away as we transition into something completely the opposite of horror movies and short story mysteries, and we're going to talk about Night Court instead. And Aaron, I know you've got to be too young to have ever watched the original Night Court with Harry Anderson.
You are correct.
Okay, well, then this discussion will be entirely lost on you, and apologies in advance. But, you know, Night Court was one of those goofy sitcoms of the, I want to say, late 80s, early 90s, with Harry Anderson as Judge Harry Stone and Marky Post as the defense attorney who believed in the goodness of everybody, that you could give everybody a second chance. And, you know, then the linchpin of the show really did turn out to be John Larroquette. The sarcasm and yet the underlying vulnerabilities that he did playing the prosecutor and assistant district attorney. Then there were some other various characters, and the show worked for a lot of us and ran for several years. And unfortunately, many of the cast members have passed away. John Larroquette is still with us. Again, it's one of those things where you don't expect one of the supporting characters. You think the whole show is going to be built around Harry Anderson, but it quickly became clear, much like the actor whose name escapes me now, who plays Sheldon on The Big Bang Theory, Jim Parsons. There we go. You know, I don't think everybody thought it was all going to be about, you know, Leonard and Penny, the central characters, but that show would have gone nowhere if it hadn't been for, you know, the way that Sheldon was played on that show. John Larroquette had that same thing going for Night Court. So it should not surprise you that Night Court has been rebooted, and in its second incarnation, John Larroquette is the cast member who agreed to be part of the new show. The judge is, of course, with Harry Anderson long since passed, the judge's character is his daughter who takes over. And she is played by the actress Melissa Rauch, who played Bernadette on Big Bang Theory. And in this case, again, it's like, can you do the same hijinks? No, you can't really. It's a different era. And what else can you do differently? Well, what they do differently, I'll try not to give away too much here because it just premiered earlier this week, is that the John Larroquette character was the prosecutor before. And Judge Stone's daughter finds him. His life hasn't really gone the way that he wanted it to. She lures him to come back to Night Court. And where it really turns is he, instead of being the prosecutor, gets talked into being the defense attorney who has to defend the very people that he thinks make his life miserable. And of course, you then see more of the vulnerabilities and you see things turn around. And so now that's the whole premise of where we start. The question then becomes, can you sustain that as a show, as a comedy? And I'll say that the writing isn't as tight as I would like it to be. And yet there were several laugh out loud lines, most of them delivered, of course, by John Larroquette. But if you are one of those 80s TV fans wondering if you should check out the reboot of Night Court, I think you should at least give it a shot. It certainly got the highest sitcom ratings that NBC has seen in like 5 years. So there was definitely a curiosity factor, and we'll see if it lingers on after that. Let's take a break for news, and then we'll have our hometown health segment with Dr. Kristen Lyerly in our next hour here on Up North News Radio.